हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Oh, we're on page 27. Okay. Okay, a sannyasi should travel alone in this way, not caring for life or death. Waiting for that doesn't mean he's, not careful. It means he doesn't care if he lives or he dies. Does that make sense? He's not worried to live longer. He's not worried if he dies. It's not. You understand? So it's the point is he's neutral. That's the whole idea, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What would be the difference between vanaprastha not caring, as what we said, because that's the main principle, and sannyas indifferent?
Because it's the vanaprastha is renunciation, mm-hmm. right? Remember, like before is that. You're doing your own work, you're giving it to the Lord. Well, sannyas means it's already the Lord's.
So vanaprastha is still your own work given to the Lord?
Like that, but it's the focus is on renunciation of giving up the facilities for sense gratification. Well, the sannyasi, because you spent your life arranging them, so you have to get to the point where you don't need them. That's why it says, you know, from 1 to 12 years, then whatever it takes to get to that point. So then from there, you could then go into sannyas, or you can just, you know, end life as a vanaprastha. You know, does that make sense? So you're trying to be in an austere situation. While the sannyasi is just supposed to take whatever situation comes up, he just engages it in Krishna's service. So it's about that mood of sannyas that it's not his, it's Krishna's. Does that make sense? So it's not that he's being austere, it's just he's just adjust with whatever situation he's in. You know, you go to one place, it's a nice facility. You go to another place, it's not a nice facility. So whatever it is, you just adjust. Does that make sense? Well, the vanaprastha will make sure he's doing things in a very austere way. So he controls his environment. In other words, the sannyasi is not in control of his environment. So just whatever comes, because he travels. Does that make sense? Slightly different means that's why they're both good as final ashrams. Either one of them will work, but it's just there's a slight difference in the mentality. So because realization gained from the one, then that will make it good for preaching. Yeah. So. Waiting for the time when he will leave his material body. Right, so it's just a matter of whenever that happens, it happens. You know, so he's not wanting to die, he's not wanting to live. Does that make sense? It's just he's here now, whatever's here, then he does his best to serve Krishna. He should not indulge in unnecessary books or adopt professions like astrology, nor should he try to become a great orator. Right? These are technically things for the grihasthas. They make the thing. He just does his service. People like it, don't like it, it doesn't matter. He just does what he does. I remember one, you know, in this case, one sannyasi, he would, who was it? It was in Kumbh Mela in Ujjain. That would have been like back, I'm not sure when that would have been. Maybe 90s or... Yeah, 90s or 80s, I don't remember. Kavi Chandra Maharaj. Hmm. Yeah. And so then he was there, and it was time for Bhagavatam class. But I think everyone was going to do something for some arrangement for the festival, I think, because they were doing big prasad distribution, so they had to go do all kinds of things. So basically, hardly anybody would be there for the class. And then when it's informed to him, it says, like, what's the problem? It says, my duty is to speak Bhagavatam. If anybody's there to hear or not, that's not my problem. You know, so that thing of not being a great orator or, you know, worrying about that, he just, you know, he would just, it's time for class, he gives class. You know, he's doing his duties like that. So that was the, right? You know, like that. So Grasso worry about how he's speaking, you know, make it more attractive like that. Not reading unnecessary books, just what it takes for what he's studying, what he's areas that he realizes where he's preaching, like that. Professionals like astrology and all that, that's for someone else because they're interpretive. And then you get involved in that, you get involved in people's lives in certain ways, and then it becomes a whole trip because they like what you said, then everything's great. They don't like what you said, then it's a problem, so don't get involved. That's the basic thing. Right, so it's a profession. Doesn't mean he doesn't know it and can't refer to it, just he doesn't do it as that's not his preaching tool. Does that make sense? Yeah. He should give up the path of unnecessary argument and should not depend on anyone under any circumstances. Right, so if someone's there to assist, nice, but he's not dependent. If they're not there, he'll do it himself. That's the whole point. He can't be dependent. He has to be independent. If people want to assist, great, but otherwise... It's not that without others, then he can't function. Like that. Okay, unnecessary argument. You're establishing the philosophy. Don't you go out of your way. Like that. Does that make sense? I remember what was with this one Brahmachari in New York. He loved to argue. Like that. Yeah. And so then... At one point, it was just too much. I left the room, right? He followed me. I'm going up the stairs. He's still arguing as we're going up the stairs, you know? And I'm just saying, what's going on? Like that, yeah. So that's unnecessary argument. He should not try to allure people into becoming his disciples just so that number of disciples may increase. He should give up the habit of reading many books as a means of livelihood, right? So it's not that... You're speaking, and because you always say new things on different things like this, and that's why you read the variety of books. No, you don't do that. It's like, well, yes.
There is a conflict. Because when sannyasi preaches, naturally it attracts people.
Right.
But then if he's indifferent, then it's, you know...
Indifferent means it's not that he's... is not interactive. Indifferent means... He just deals with the situation as the people deal with him. So indifferent means whether it's a nice situation or not, that's not going to bother him. So as people deal with you, that's how you respond. Just like Krishna. No one's a friend, no one's an enemy, but how you deal with him is how he'll respond. Does that make sense? So it's a particular state of mind. Because generally we take, at least by the Western kind of concept of indifference means you don't care, so you're not nice, you don't interact properly. But that's not what it means. It means you just deal with the situation as it comes. You don't try to arrange situations. Does that make sense? You don't try to arrange a nice situation. You just deal with whatever's there. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, can we say that the first person accepts sannyas and then this mentality develops, or first it develops the...
Depends. If you're not a devotee, then you'd have to develop the mentality and then take up the ashram. Right? Because for the materialists, they have to have the material qualifications before they can take up the position. Because they don't have anything to generate the qualities. Right? Because jnana won't develop knowledge and detachment, karma will. Right? So by performance of karma, so you could say in that way as a vanaprastha, then they'll develop the knowledge and detachment by which then they could do practice sannyas. Does that make sense? But as devotees, then it would be ideal that one has this before, at least a good potential, but they can develop it within the ashram itself. You know, like Prabhupada says, that in the material platform, then you perform an activity, you become good at it, you become good for a long time, then people notice, then you get the position. But with devotional service, you just take up the position, and then by devotional service, because of its potency, then you start to develop the qualities of that. Does that make sense? You know, it's like giving class. You wouldn't have a clue how to speak or what to speak on and that, but you give class, and by giving it, then you learn. But it's not that you're learning just by experience and skill. You're learning because you're doing service to Krishna, Him being pleased, then you can do it. Does that make sense? So, if one has the qualities, then that's always better. But if not, then one should develop them. One should know what it is and then work towards that. So when there's an opportunity to do this, one would. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Because I just remember that many years ago, somebody said that this ashram, sannyas ashram, is not the ashram for developing certain amount of renunciation. It should be already there, otherwise one will fall down.
Yes. No, there should be. It means, in other words, there must be something there that they've gained from their service and devotional service. So it's not like somebody walks in the door and then the first thing you do is give them sannyas, right? So they have done, but what we're meaning is these finer points than they may learn to develop. So in a sense, but yes, definitely there must be that mood of simplicity, renunciation, and all the detachment, independence. Because you see, the ones that have this more are the ones that it works easier for them. Like that. Okay. So... Yeah. You know, like I think it was the same with that, I think he was talking when, I can't remember when it was. I'm not sure if it was at that time or if it was later I met him. Same Kavi Chandra Maharaj. There was a fire in the Tokyo temple, I think it was Tokyo, maybe it was one of the other. He was there and he was on the upper floor. And so the fire started and the way to go out was blocked, so he couldn't do. So he just sat down and thought, okay, this is it, you know. Just started chanting like that, you know. And then I think the fire department came and this and that, and so it worked out. But, you know, it was just one of those, okay, that's it, you know. So that's what it means. That's the mentality, you know. If you live, you preach. And if it's not, then that's, you know, it's just, you're not worried about it either way. Does that make sense? That's the meaning of it. So like that. Because sometimes you take it, oh no, the austere and renounced and all that. No, it's just simple. The austere and renounced, that's actually vanaprastha. Like that. Does that make sense? But from that, then having done that, then naturally that will be the lifestyle, so you'll see that in the sannyas. Does that make sense? But it's softer in the sannyas. It's more, you know, rugged in the vanaprastha. Yesterday they had somebody who could really sing all kinds of fancy stuff.
Ekalavi?
I'm not sure. Maybe it was Ekalavi goes out with them. He was singing all kinds of... You could tell they knew music. They were singing all over the place and far out stuff, and devotees were having trouble keeping up. Socrates, yeah, he wasn't worried. Like, you know. Before they come by, they turn the mics.
He does
it on purpose. Yeah, because when he came by yesterday, the class was much quieter. Socrates. They gave him the hemlock, and he's sitting there and preaching and this and that, and then when they kind of tell him, hey, you know, it's getting late. Oh, okay, you know. So it didn't matter either way to him.
I'm crying. He's just in
the room. Are you crying? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so like that. Okay. He should not attempt to increase the number of temples and mats or monasteries. So he may preach, and then all he preaches to, they do that. But he himself wouldn't take the charge of that, because then you have to deal with all that kind of complicated management and this and that, and that's not the business. Others can do that. That's the point, is your brahmacharis, your grihasthas, they can do that kind of thing. Because they're fired up, they can do all those things. But sannyasa should just focus on the preaching, just on inspiring people. Yes?
It seems from this description that this is already a level of self-realized soul.
Ideally, yes.
But not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but you would say is that from this that there would be a strong understanding of the principle that was mentioned before of being able to see the Lord in everything and understand that philosophically. Whether there's a realization of that, that will come with time. But at least that kind of understanding that you see things in that light, that would make it so much easier. Right? Because then whatever you're dealing with, you can. Just like that vision, then Priyavrata is applying that, you know, as brahmachari. Then he's applying the same thing as a grihastha. So he's a good brahmachari, he's a good grihastha. Like that. So it'll work either way. Right? Does that make sense? But because the point of the ashram, it is for that. Means, what are you preaching? You're preaching what you're realizing. You know, as you realize, then you can, it'll make the preaching all that much better. Right? That's why before they had the 4 months in the rainy season where they just sit down and study and just do sadhana or, you know, sit and discuss and these things. So they wouldn't be out preaching. They'd just be resting and doing their own personal development. Then 8 months they'd go out and preach. You know, so that was the whole idea, is that you're cultivating your own sadhana, devotional development, and you're preaching that. You know, so, but it's 2-1, right? You know, 1 for yourself, 2 for everybody else. Yeah, so it's different than the kids one. 1 for you, 2 for me. No, it's the other way around, you know. Like, isn't that, they still do that? Yeah.
Many goes, 1 for you, 2 for me, 1 for you, 3 for me.
Oh, okay, it keeps going? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
My brother said that to me.
Yeah, yeah, and you end up with nothing, right? I'm supposed to get 5, but there's only 1 left, and yeah, so I don't take 5. Yeah. You're not going to eat that, right? Okay. When a sannyasi thus becomes completely independent, peaceful, and equipoised, he can select the destination he desires after death and follow the principles by which to reach that destination. Right? Because independent, peaceful, and equipoised, then it means you're not really connected to the material world, so then you can choose your position, where you want to go. So this would work. Now, the actual point is it's supposed to be devotional service. But if you are focused on Brahman or the heavenly planets, it would still work. It would still do the same thing. It's just that since you've gotten to this point, why waste it on these lower two? It should be used in devotion. Right? For all this work, why not get eternal benefit? Because the other ones are only going to give some temporary benefit. Right? So, although fully learned, he should always remain silent like a dumb person and travel like a restless child. Like, his children don't stay in much place for long. Even you are so affectionate to them, they'll interact and then they'll leave. They don't get attached to it. It's just their nature. You know, you see, they're there, they come up, you know, like that, interact, sit in your lap, and then after 2 seconds they get up and run off and go do something else, and like that. So that's the whole point. And dumb means, unless asked or unless there's a proper situation, you don't speak. That was the meaning before, is that if you can give up unnecessary arguing, then you can do this. Right? You can be equal poised, you can be peaceful, you can be independent. Otherwise, then one can't do that. One has to argue in that, then it's a problem. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So, like that, let them think you're an idiot, but, you know, why waste your time on people who just want to argue? Because there are those individuals who just like to argue just because, you know, it's something to do. It's a mode of passion. Passion of passion, they love to argue. You know, it's the same like kings. They like to win a battle, win a... So it's that element of passion has to be given up. In this regard, Narad Muni described a meeting between Prahlad and a saintly person who had adopted the mode of life of a python. In this way, he described the symptoms of a Paramahamsa. A person who has attained the Paramahamsa stage knows very well the distinction between matter and spirit. Right? So that would mean in this, from your question, from Mati's question before, is that therefore the development from Kutichak, Bahudak, and Pribhajakacharya, that's where you'd be developing this. So when you get to Paramahamsa, you would have these qualities already. But it's not that it couldn't have already started before that. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, so ideally Pribhajakacharya, you would see, you know, something there. But in Kutichak Bahudak, then you'd expect that they'd be working on this. Because then you're shifting from just being austere and those things like you would in Vanaprastha, because Vanaprasthas are also hosting is a major aspect. I think, did I mention that this morning? Okay, it's like that. So they're doing those kind of things because they're just on the edge of the village or on the edge of the forest, so people will come and visit them. Right? Other Brahmins, other Vanaprasthas, Grihasthas, like this. So then they host. Right. So they collect, they do these things, then they use what they distribute, and people will bring them things, and they distribute that to whoever comes, and you understand. So that kind of element. So they're switching from that into where it's just independent. You're not dependent upon anything. Is that yeah? He's not at all interested in gratifying the material senses. For he is always deriving pleasure from devotional service to the Lord. So gratifying the material senses. So senses are only engaged in devotional service. That's why you're not worried about the particular quality of the engagement. It's devotional service. That's why one's engaging. Yeah. Being satisfied with whatever he attains by the grace of the Lord, he is completely independent of material happiness and distress. And thus he is transcendental to all regulative principles. Sometimes he accepts, doesn't mean he's not following, but the point is he's not dependent upon those for everything to work. You know, it's like we get up early in the morning, you know, do some chanting and that, then the day goes in one way. We get up late and other things are happening, then the day goes in another way. But so here's their transcendental irregular principles means they can always be transcendental no matter what happens. Does that make sense? So they're not dependent upon sadhana to keep themselves transcendental. Their consciousness, their vision is that. So naturally, they will follow because the point is the regulative principles that are given, you know, as the sadhana, is the simplest, most straightforward lifestyle. It's the most practical. So one would live that. But one does not necessarily have greater arrangements in that. Does that make sense? It'll just be simple, just how much is necessary. Right? He is not very anxious to protect his material body. Being satisfied, you know, so he just does what he does, what he knows he does. So he can talk, he can this and that, but we see his Madhvacharya because he knew wrestling. There's a certain kind of wrestling that they have in Kerala, like that. Mm-hmm. No, that's in Kerala. Oh, did I say Kerala? And Karnataka. There's a different kinds, I can't remember what it is, that there's, but it's some unique thing. He knew that, and so then he was out, and one day they're attacked by dacoits, and he just uses Dunda and killed them all. Like that, you know. So, you know. But it's not that you're over-anxious and worried about it and going to classes. It means, you know, he knew this from before. So now he uses it. Like that. So he knew something. I mean, it might help that he's Hanuman, but, you know, hey. Being satisfied with whatever he attains by the grace of the Lord, he is completely independent of material happiness and distress, and thus he is transcendental to all regulative principles. Sometimes he accepts severe austerities, and sometimes he accepts material opulence. His only concern is to satisfy Krishna, and for that purpose he can do anything and everything, without reference to the regulative principles. Right? So that's the idea, is that whatever is there, it's just like I think one sannyasi was complaining to Prabhupada, you know, he's there at the temple and he has to take care of so many things and go to the bank and take care of the money, and that's such a disturbance for his sannyas and all this, and Prabhupada then wrote back and says, I go to the bank every day, right? Because the point is for Krishna. So that's why he says, you might have very nice situation, not nice situation, very busy, very simple. Whatever is good for devotional service, that's what's accepted. That's the idea. That's the main thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. He is never to be equated with materialistic men, nor is he subject to the judgments of such men. And, you know, even they, he's not subject, means by the Lord and all that, doesn't matter. People like, don't like, you know, the Avantipur Brahmin, they all thought he was crazy, or Sukadev Goswami thinks, but he's not subject to that. He is who he is, despite that. Is that, yeah. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 9, the Sannyas Ashram. Verses 10 to 46, the Paramahamsa stage. Verses 1 to 9, the Sannyas Ashram. Free from dependence on any
one.
Dependence on any aniya. Okay.
Fear of being annoyed.
Okay. So he's not dependent on being annoyed. Okay. Yeah, some people, they have to be annoyed. But, you know,
it's true.
So it's free from that. Okay. Sannyasi should travel everywhere for the benefit of all. Sri Narad Muni said, a person able to cultivate spiritual knowledge should renounce all material connections. And merely keeping the body inhabitable, he should travel from one place to another, passing only one night in each village. So keeping the body inhabitable, so you have to do what you do, like that. So if that means certain medical things or certain things that you do to make it so it works, you do that. But you're only doing that so that, therefore, then one can preach. It's not that you have the idea, I will do this and then I'll become healthy and happy and all these different things. Does that make sense? You know, that's for when you're younger, you have that idea. like that. He should travel from one place to another, passing only one night in each village. In this way, without dependence in regard to the needs of the body, the sannyasi should travel all over the world. Right? Because then you see is that the Lord takes care. Like that. Because the point is the Lord, and sometimes it's nice, sometimes it's not nice. You can say is, oh, but only if you're advanced, it won't happen. But it's—I think it's coming up. We haven't come to it yet. Where Narad Muni, I forget where he was, and he comes and visits. Unless it's book. No, we didn't read it. That he came and he hadn't eaten in 3 days. You come across this yet? And so then, Prabhupada, the purport mentions that if the sannyasi doesn't get something to eat, he just drinks water. You know, so Narad Muni's just drinking water for 3 days, like that. And then he came to, I forget who, and met somebody. I'm not sure who it was. And then they received him and took care. That's the meaning. There's no food. He drinks water. And then they comes to the palace, and there's a huge opulent thing like this. And then the next day he's off, and again, who knows what? So, right, yeah. A person in the renounced order of life may try to avoid even a dress to cover himself. If he wears anything at all, it should be only a loincloth. And when there is no necessity, a sannyasi should not even accept a danda. Right, so if you're in either in the place where that kind of preaching and that would be known, then you do. But if you're in the forest, who cares? Right? It just doesn't matter. Like that. Does that make sense? So generally here is they would just go around with nothing at all. So when they say renounce, they mean renounced. Like that. But, you know, if you're in areas where they may or may not appreciate that, then you know, wear a loincloth. That, yeah. Okay. Sannyasi should avoid carrying anything but a danda and kamandalu. The sannyasi, completely satisfied in the self, should live on alms begged from door to door. But when they go door to door, as we remember, they don't go at the regular time when the brahmacharis, the brahmins, the beggars, and that go. They go after. So late enough that you can see there's no more cooking, because it's like they'll cook and then they'll take care of guests and that. You know, so that those who come for begging and things like that. And then after that, then the family will eat. So during that time, there may be some cooking going on. Right? So when there's no smoke coming from the fires, then you can tell that it's all over, and then and that's the time when he goes. Because then, if they do have something, it's what's left over. You're not taking from anybody. Right? So this is also what it means by not following the regulation, because Brahmins don't eat sesha. Right? It means what's left, it means everybody's finished eating, what's left over, that you don't offer to Brahmins, to sannyasis, to like this. It's not considered, it's everybody else's leftover. It's called sesha. So, but this is, they're just begging, and all they're getting is sesha. So they're not worrying about these, because socially you just don't do that. You know, it's a junior position. Does that make sense? Yeah. Second installment. Class for so much time, they didn't go by. Okay. Not being dependent on any person or any place, you should always be a friendly well-wisher to all living beings and be a peaceful, unalloyed devotee of Narayana. In this way, should move from one place to another. The sannyasi should always try to see the Supreme pervading everything and see everything, including this universe, resting on the Supreme. Footnote 12. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 6:30, "For one who sees everything and sees everything in me, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me." Srila Prabhupada comments. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness, right? So we can understand this is the mentality that we're all trying to get to, right? So just like the lifestyle of the brahmachari, that the principles that are there, that's the lifestyle for everybody, right? So that's just the base of how you live your life. But the goal that you're trying to get to is this mentality, right? So you can see is that basically, in the Vedic system, it's a progression of mentality, not a progression of skills. Right? that's why then the Brahmachari Ashram, it's about developing the qualities. Skills you can learn at that time or learn later. But qualities, if you haven't started them at that time, you won't gain them later. Right? It means without a lot of work. You know what I'm saying? It means you can gain later, but I'm saying you can gain because of devotional service. Does that make sense? Let's say materially someone is working on developing these qualities when they're young. But when they get older, where's the time? You basically have to deal with the situations. The difference is that one's thinking, I will control the situations and adjust it. While the sannyasi is doing the same thing, dealing with the situations, but just seeing how to connect it to Krishna. Does that make sense? No, that's a different one. Yeah? Yes?
One can have this kind of lifestyle that you just read, but one may find that rather than not depending on anyone, they're actually dependent on everyone.
Yes, so that's the whole point, is that it's about the mentality that is there. Because it's not getting the detail of what they're doing in their life. It's about the mentality that's there.
Feeling independent?
No, about being independent. That one doesn't require that situation.
Maybe this is different when it comes to women, because women require...
Yes, but women are always dependent, so therefore they always put themselves in an environment. But within that, you can get where it's as simple as possible and there's not so much. Because point is if you live a very simple lifestyle, then there's very minimal you need to depend on anybody else for. So there may be a protected environment, mm-hmm. but as far as doing whatever you need to do, no one has to help you. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the kind of thing. You get to that point where, you know, if somebody helps, nice, but if they don't help, you can do it yourself. Does that make sense? Okay. During unconsciousness and consciousness, and between the two, he should try to understand the self and be fully situated in the self. Okay, so that's always what the one is thinking about. So if that's there, then when you're conscious, you're thinking about self-realization. Then tendency is when one's unconscious or in between, that's what one will think about. Does that make sense? Yeah. In this way, should realize that the conditional and liberated stages of life are only illusory and not actually factual. Footnote 13. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up or liberated. And since I am the Supreme Lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I also am never to be considered liberated or in bondage." Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.1. Because the soul never is actually bound. He just identifies that way. But the soul is always has their nature. Does that make sense? So that's why one's not technically ever bound or liberated. So Krishna's like that and he knows it. We identify that way. So then we'll say, this person is liberated, this person is bound. But technically, if one's Krishna conscious, then one is beyond that. This makes sense? Yeah? With such a higher understanding, he should see only the absolute truth pervading everything. Since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor. You know, it's like you say something, oh my... That, you know, that was so crazy. Did you see what happened? That was so crazy. If that happened to me, I'd die. Right? So the point is here is that, you know, or something's going great. Wow, this is the life. So the point is they're not disturbed by either of these. It's nice, not nice. You know, things just go on.
Alright.
Yes.
There are certain situations, like, I know this in theory, like I've heard this many times, but there are certain situations which really have a severely traumatic effect on people. Like, they really do, and they stand in the way of everything, including their spiritual life. So is that because they're not on this platform?
Basically. Okay. See, is the thing is you try to arrange it so you're in a situation where you will have the least disturbances, not because it will make you happy, is because it's the best for Krishna consciousness. Just like the Vanaprastha, he doesn't practice austerities that are more severe than he can actually handle. Right? So he only functions at the level he's at. Because the idea is to be Krishna conscious, not the other aspects. Those are only in support. Right? But misery comes up because of attachment. So the more we're attached, the more miserable conditions we'll be in. So the idea is through the practice of Krishna consciousness, then that attachment is given up, so these situations start to bother us less and less.
I'm thinking of something more extreme than that, like just say you're in an abusive relationship, like a physically abusive relationship or something like that. Like, that really does have an effect.
Yes, but the point is... See, there's a problem in discussing this, because it's a matter of, do we understand the principle? Okay? Is this particular discussion, that, let's say we ask a question, is that point actually our situation? Because if it is, then yes, it's something to address. If it's not, then there is a theoretical aspect to it that one could go on arguing. What is it?
Ad infinitum.
Okay. Yes. Means go on forever. You can argue it at infinitively. Okay. You see, because you have the position where someone is intelligent, so they can observe, they can see things, and they have some kind of sensitivity to others, you know, on the social platform, and so then they can see it from so many angles, and whichever angle you take, then you'll have the problem is it's never the right one, because then there's this, even you answer this, but then there's this, and then there's this, while the person who is in that position, then you can actually address it, because it's not these unlimited different things. There's a specific, few things. You address that, they have questions about it, you answer that, then you can get somewhere. But if we're just discussing basically something like this, which is issue-based, then there is no answer because the educated, sensitive mind can come up with unlimited varieties of ways so you can't answer it. You understand?
Okay, I promise I won't say any more.
No, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, therefore, it's a matter of take this, apply it into the situation. Because the point is this, just being in the material world is a problem. So it's not that means some people have more problem, but some people have less. And then what we'd call a problem, someone else has, it calls it less, will be less of a problem. You know? Does that make sense? And it's always trying to establish that someone else's problem is greater. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, something like this, then you can just go on eternally with it. So you have to take it, and in your own life, how do I apply this in my life? Because if we just want to say, I've had this problem, therefore I am, what do you call it? Where you don't have to follow something?
Exempt.
I'm exempt from actually applying this because I've had such a difficult situation that I can't apply Krishna consciousness. You know, I remember one girl, she got involved with this boy, and they weren't married in some kind of, unlawful relationship. She couldn't chant her japa. She couldn't do any sadhana because all she'd think about was this. But the point is technically you could. But because one's committed to that mood of that, then one can't. Hence, I don't know about, you know, what's the common thing now, but when I grew up, junior high is the time when you bring out all these stories about somebody who grew up in a really bad environment but made it up to the top socially. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Is that still junior high? I don't know. That seems to be the time for it because, you know, you're old enough to understand there's issues, but young enough to that not say, oh, this is stupid. Right? You know, so it's kind of the right time. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is people do make it. So Krishna consciousness, being transcendental, is not dependent upon the material situations. You see, people, they're not following any of the regulative principles. They come to the temple, they like what's going on, and from that day they follow them. One could say, how is that possible, this and that, blah, but it's done. So the point is, yes, one's come from a background, it's going to be difficult, but at the same time you take up Krishna consciousness, then it's going to go better. But if one doesn't take up Krishna consciousness, then it's, you know, just going to remain whatever it is. So we're not saying that it's fine, it doesn't matter, and this and that, but this is not the place for that kind of discussion. Mm-hmm. You understand?
I was asking because of it's not my...
That's what I'm saying.
But other devotees have asked me about it.
Yes, but the point is that because it's an intellectual thing, it's not yours, it's not theirs, it's someone else's, they can think of 20 different angles on this person's life. But the person who's actually gone through it, there's a specific angle. So therefore, yes, they haven't given shelter, they've been abused, but Krishna's not like that. Krishna is the shelter. He's there in your heart. He doesn't... Oh, okay, yeah. No, that's, I could relate to that. See, what you have to understand is the people that are on the street that go through that are actually way more practical than the intellectual middle class. Like a million to one, maybe, you know. They're really down-to-earth people. So you tell them that this is what is, then they take it. The ones that you can never convince are the group, that group from the middle class. You talk to you blue in the face. And no, but they got another angle. That's why I'm saying I don't want to approach the question, because it doesn't matter which, if you take it on the soft side, then, you know, what about, you know, being more serious than that? If you take it on, you know, this and that, oh, but you're insensitive like that. You can't win. It's guaranteed you can't win. It doesn't matter which way you... Because the point is to find fault. So that's what I'm saying. If someone has the problem, then you can actually deal with it. But if someone's only discussing about the problem, you can never deal with it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like saying, oh, but if they read, you know, Prabhupada says in the purport, no intelligent person would ever, you know, accept this. It's like how many hundreds of thousands of people have joined and they're all stupid? So what it means is they can't accept it. They're not pious enough. And then they think everybody else is like that. And everybody else will just, oh, okay, like that, and okay, I can try that, all like this, but they, no, it's all issue-based, it's all unnecessary argument, as mentioned here previously.
I was just asking so I can help people.
That's another thing. But the point is that Krishna consciousness is the only support. Point is doesn't matter the background, you have to deal with it, you have to move on. You know, okay, you had a problem there. Someone else has had a different thing. Someone else has had physically a wonderful environment, but emotionally then they harass them like anything. You know what I'm saying? And someone else is that at home it's great, but at work it's terrible. Or someone else at work it's great, at home it's terrible. Or, you know, their mom's great, their father's, you know, terrible. Or the other way around. Or they're great, but their siblings are terrible. Or this and that. Or they hate the cat. Or, you know, I think there's something that goes on that is doesn't matter who you are. It's you know, you can say, no, but in comparison, theirs is worse. But the point is for by experience, it's not. Everybody's experiencing exactly the same thing.
It seems different
when you look at theirs, but what they feel is different. Just like Prabhupada mentioned about if the rich man knew the difficulty and the pain of the poor man, he would never refuse to give money. And if the poor man understood the position of the rich man and his attachment to money, he'd never ask. You understand? So that's the point. That's where you have the story of the princess and the pea. You know that one? Okay. Now for her, that was an uncomfortable night. That's one you write down in your diary, you know, that was a bad night. Right? So if I gave, you know, for us, one mattress, we'd be fine. She had 15 mattresses, and it was uncomfortable.
Is it big?
Yeah, you understand? Mm-hmm. So that's the whole point, is that then it just gets into this mundane argument over, no, but theirs is worse, and this and that, and, you know, it turns into like that Monty Python, you know, where they're going on, and each of this, you know, labor class guys are saying, yeah, I guess this, and father that, till finally they get into, you know, we're living in a shoebox, and, you know, all we get to eat is a handful of rocks, and, you know, we're woken up before we go to sleep, and, you know, it just keeps going more and more ridiculous as they go, because each one is, so, you know, yeah, my life was like, oh, that's nothing, my life is this, the other, oh, no, but that, and they just keep going more and more and more, so that kind of thing we don't require. The point is you be Krishna conscious, it will get rid of all those things. As it said here, the soul is none of that. The soul isn't bound or liberated. So at any moment, the soul can, if you want. If you want to feel bad about your background and this and how it's unjust, you can do that. But if you want to be happy, you just have to move on, because we've been here unlimited lifetimes. So why is this one any different than anybody else's? You know? Does that make sense? So ultimately, that's what you have to deal with. And people who come from that kind of background, if they want a solution, you can actually talk this to them. Those who just want people to feel sorry for them, yes, you can never find anything. And those who are issue-based, who, you know, get the bile moving so they can digest lunch, then you can also never answer anything. So it's like, it's a waste of time. Does that make sense? That's enough. Okay. Since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entity manifests himself and disappears. Right, so you observe that, is that the living entities are coming into existence and living entities are leaving. It's constantly going on. So all these different things are just happening. You just see time factors making everything work. So when it's a nice situation, it goes bad. So when it's a bad situation, it goes nice. It's just time factors constantly changing everything. So you see that, then whatever situation you're in, you do the best to be Krishna conscious. That's what you're trying to do. Srila Prabhupada comments, the living entities in the material world, not only at the present but also in the past, have been involved in trying to solve the problem of birth and death. Some stress death and point to the illusory existence of everything material, whereas others stress life, trying to preserve it perpetually and enjoy it to the best of their ability. Both of them are fools and rascals. It is advised that one observe the eternal time factor, which is the cause of the material body's appearance and disappearance, and that one observe the living entity's entanglement in this time factor. Right? So the material world's terrible and all these things like that. Yes, but why is it terrible? What's the terribleness? The lack of Krishna consciousness. And what's the good part is the Krishna consciousness. Because if Krishna is everything, then one can see Krishna in anything, and therefore then one can be Krishna conscious. So there's no problem. So it's only when one doesn't see Krishna that there's the problem comes up. Does that make sense? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore sings in his Gita Vali, Anadi karma phale padi bhavarnava jale. Taribhare na deki upai. One should observe the activities of eternal time, which is the cause of birth and death. Before the creation of the present millennium, the living entities were under the influence of the time factor. And within the time factor, the material world comes into existence and is again annihilated. Bhutva bhutva paliyate. Bhagavad Gita 8:19. Being under the control of the time factor, the living entities appear and die, life after life. This time factor is the impersonal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives the living entities conditioned by material nature a chance to emerge from this nature by surrendering to Him. Right? So the time factor is the Lord's impersonal feature. Right? It's part of that. Just like the material energy is coming from the Brahman. And so its transformation is all happening within the impersonal feature. Right? That's how the material world is maintained and you know, how you say, is it created, manifest, and is manifest and destroyed is through this. So then we as individuals, then we can either see the Lord in this and advance spiritually, or not see the Lord and think that we're going to get something out of this, then we're like this, bound by time and the modes of nature. Okay. Okay. Narad Muni continued. Literature that is a useless waste of time, in other words, literature without spiritual benefit, should be rejected. One should not become a professional teacher as a means of earning one's livelihood, nor should one indulge in arguments and counter-arguments, nor should one take shelter of any cause or faction. Right? So you don't take up as a cause, as different things like this. It's that it's Krishna consciousness is the thing. Different causes, different factions come up, arguments, counter-arguments come up, having all this different kind of body of knowledge without Krishna, this is all due to lack of Krishna consciousness. Right? Any body of knowledge seen in connection with Krishna, it works. But not seen in connection with Krishna, it doesn't have a value on its own. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada comments. A person desiring to advance in spiritual understanding should be extremely careful to avoid reading ordinary literature. The world is full of ordinary literature that creates unnecessary agitation in the mind. Right? Because the people in the book, right, have all kinds of desires, needs, actions. Where does that come from? The mind of the writer. So all of their needs and all that, that's all presented very cleverly, you know, in the pages of the book. So basically you're associating with their material desire. Right? So it's therefore it's not good association. The world, okay. Such literature, including newspapers, dramas, novels, and magazines, is factually not meant for advancement in spiritual knowledge. Right? There's something that you know what's going on in the world, and that's okay. But it's not that there's a need for reading these things. You may read for just to know. Remember once, I think it was, Shatadanya. He was temple president in Calcutta. Something came up, and he didn't know about it. And Prabhupada said, why you didn't know about it? He, you know, says it's in the papers. Because he asked, how did these others know about it? Got it from the papers. So he asked him, why aren't you reading the papers so you know about this? Right? So you know what's happening so that you can, therefore, the aspect of Krishna consciousness. But it's not that they have to read the newspaper. There are people that have to read the newspaper. So it's not from that. It's just a matter of if there's an importance that you're dealing with certain things, then you know. And if not, why do you don't need to know? Like the brahmacharis didn't need to read the newspaper. Such literature is factually not meant for advancement in spiritual knowledge. Indeed, it is described as a place of enjoyment for crows. Tad vashayam tirtam. Right? Because crows, you have garbage, then they come down. Right? Means you have where the garbage will be thrown. Right? Next to where the garbage is thrown, there's always some place to perch. So if you take Calcutta, there's always a wall. right? You throw garbage over in the corner where there's a wall. You don't just throw it out, because there is no middle of nowhere in Calcutta, right? So there's always a wall. So who's sitting on the wall? The crows, right? You throw the garbage, immediately they go down to check out if there's something of value there. So that's the point of the literature. That's why it's for crows, because people go through it to try to see if there's any substance, though it's just garbage. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Anyone advancing in spiritual knowledge must reject such literature. Furthermore, one should not concern oneself with the conclusions of various logicians or philosophers, right? Because somebody, oh, this one says this, that one says that. What about this? We don't care. We have our acharyas. What they say is what we're worried about. Someone wants to discuss what's the absolute truth, great. If someone just wants to argue over, well, this one said this and that one said that, then we're not interested. Like that. Okay. Of course, those who preach sometimes need to argue with the contentions of impotence, but as much as possible, one should avoid an argumentative attitude. Right, so it's not that because there was a great argument, that was great preaching. That's not the... Does that make sense? You know, that's not the... Okay. But maybe sometimes it does turn into an argument, but... Sri Narad continues. And sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. Right, so you're not showing from the scriptures, you're focusing on the material benefits. Right, one can show there's better situations in Krishna consciousness where all these different things are taken care of, as we see the Bhagavatam does, but it doesn't focus on those. There's no details on that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. Right? He's speaking to preach, but it's not that he maintains himself by speaking. Right? Because he speaks whenever there's an opportunity. And however Krishna takes care, that's what he has. But it's not that he goes to all these engagements so he has a better material situation. Right? He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. So what's required that you have, more than that you don't have. You know, if you find that you have more than what you need, then you give it in charity. Srila Prabhupada comments. So-called swamis and yogis generally make disciples by alluring them with material benefits. There are so many... I can remember once we were sitting in one Brahmin's house in Madras. We were invited for lunch. And so then there was this other, he was probably South Indian, but in South they don't accept non-sampradayic sadhus. They don't like non-sampradayic sadhus. You have to be Sri, you have to be Madhwa, you have to be Shankara. You know, you're not like in North where you're just a freewheeling sadhu, you just dressed up and Hari Bol. Like that. They don't appreciate it. So, because there's many people interested in being kind of, you know, living the more detached lifestyle, then the South Indians, they go up north. So many of your North Indian big sadhus and leaders, they're all South Indians. So they got the brains, but then, you know, because, how you say, in a village of blind men, someone with one eye is the king. Yes. Okay. So, then they come. So this guy was some variety of like sadhu, but he was South Indian. He was a local, and he was talking about Sai Baba and how he had visited him and how he just produced these perfectly new crisp banknotes. He was so impressed. You know, it wasn't like old stuff. This was brand new. You know, who knows where he got it from. you know whether the Reserve Bank was looking at, where did that go? So the point is they were like this. So he was so impressed by this material benefit. You know what I'm saying? So that's the kind of thing, though. The Swamis, they shouldn't do that kind of stuff. It should be about spiritual life. You leave this other stuff for other people. There are many so-called gurus who attract disciples by promising to cure their diseases or increase their material opulence by manufacturing gold. Yes. These are lucrative allurements for unintelligent men. A sannyasi is prohibited from making disciples through such material allurements. Sannyasis sometimes indulge in material opulence by unnecessarily constructing many temples and monasteries. But actually, such endeavors should be avoided, right? In other words, we say, oh, if you have the temple, so many people will come. It's not like that. When you have people that are interested, they'll build the temple. Does that make sense? Like, you know, one of the more opulent and nicest temples in our movement is in Chopati. They built a community. The community built the temple. The leading preacher, the sannyasi, never did it. You understand? That's the principle. So it's that you preach, and then if there's need of temples, monasteries, that they'll build them. Does that make sense? So the whole point is just to preach and cultivate. The others can do that. Does that make sense? That's the whole idea. So unless there's actually it's necessary for the preaching, then okay, then one does. But it shouldn't be thought that if we do this, that will make the preaching. Does that make sense? Like that. Temples and monasteries should be constructed for the preaching of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, not to provide free hotels for persons who are useless or for neither material or spiritual purposes. Prabhupada says no lazies, no crazies in the temple. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's thought, oh no, but they'll have no place to go. If they have no place to go, why are they in the temple in the first place? Because the temple is for those who can lead society, not for those who have no place to go. Right? That's you know, when you're going from Park Street, Park Circus, and you go over a bridge there, and over to the left, there's a big ashram there and that. That's where those people should be going. Like that. In fact, the person who ran that ashram, I think they just got canonized. Like that. So, yes, but our places are for Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yes. Oh, here it says. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Temples and monasteries should be strictly off limits to worthless clubs of crazy men. Okay. In the Krishna conscious movement, we welcome everyone who agrees at least to follow the movement's regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meeting, and no gambling. In the temples and monasteries, gatherings of unnecessary rejected lazy fellows should be strictly disallowed. Right? Because you have a program. They're supposed to follow it, but they can't follow the program, and they need this, and they need that. They should be at home. Right? Because the person is so useless now, before he actually maintained himself. Maybe not very good, so that's why he should continue to maintain himself, and then come to the temple and do what service he can. Does that make sense? Like that. Because then, when they show up, they do some nice service. And in between, when they don't show up, they're not driving you crazy. But if they live in the temple, then when they're not showing up for the programs, they're driving you crazy. Right? Yeah. Hence the better an empty barn than a barn full of bad cows. Right? Yes. The temples and monasteries should be used exclusively by devotees who are serious about spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the word arambhan as meaning matadi vyaparan, which means attempts to construct temples and monasteries, right? Because Prabhupada mentions this because we have now and again here and there. Monastery means where it's just only residential is brahmacharis and sannyasis. And then they may preach, and the gatherings may be, you know, broader than that, or community, but who lives there is that. Temple means then all the four ashrams live there. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the difference. For us, it's, they're all Krishna conscious in that, and like that. The first business of the sannyasi is to preach Krishna consciousness. But if by the grace of Krishna facilities are available, then he may construct temples and monasteries to give shelter to the serious students of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, such temples and monasteries are not needed. Right? So he preaches, by that then you have so many devotees, then you make something, that's what we mean. But to make it and then think from that I will attract attention and get people to come and this way I'll get money, that's not done. Does that make sense? Sri Narad Muni continued, a peaceful, equipoised person who is factually advanced in spiritual consciousness does not need to accept the symbols of a sannyasi, such as the tridanda and kamandalu. Right? So here he's mentioning tridanda, so it's not a new thing. Some say, oh, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur started this and that. No, it's always been there. The Vedic tridanda is sannyas. This thing of Ekadanda with the Mayavadis, that kind of Shankara put together. You know, there'll be some support for it, but it's not your prominent. Manu mentions Tridanda. Here, Bhagavatam's mentioning Tridanda. According to necessity, you may sometimes accept those symbols and sometimes reject them. Right? So if someone's on that advanced platform, then he doesn't need them, because by having them, then people will come, they'll respect, they'll deal properly and all this. But when he's like this, factually advanced, then he doesn't need them, because whether people appreciate or not, he's not worried about it. So if it will be an advantage to preaching, he'll accept them. But for his own position, then that's not important. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, there are four stages of the renounced order of life, Kutichak, Bahudak, Privajak Acharya, and Paramahamsa. Herein, Srimad Bhagavatam considers the Paramahamsas among the sannyasis. Unless one is in the Paramahamsa stage, he is not eligible to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. For Paramahamsa, so you have Brahmins, and then amongst Brahmins, then the Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Of that, then you have four is up to the Paramahamsas. Right, and that was, we were starting with Brahmins, right, and that we're starting with Varna Ashram, and here we're starting with Antyaja. So, therefore, only by Krishna's grace then we can understand. Right, so therefore, Paramahamsa means it's just about Krishna. So the more we appreciate it's just about Krishna, the more we'll understand Bhagavatam. For Paramahamsas or sannyasis in the Vaishnava order, preaching is the first duty. To preach, such sannyasis may accept the symbols of sannyas, such as the danda and kamandalu, or sometimes they may not. Generally, the Vaishnava sannyasis, being paramahamsas, are automatically called babajis, and they do not carry a kamandalu or danda. Such a sannyasi is free to accept or reject the marks of sannyas. His only thought is, where is there an opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness? Sometimes the Krishna conscious movement sends its representative sannyasis to foreign countries where the danda and kamandalu are not very much appreciated. Right? You know, you want to take them on the plane, they don't like them on the plane. I'm not sure what they think they are, but like this. And even if you have a folding one, then that's even more of a problem, because there's many sticks. Why many sticks? Like that. I forget where it was. It was Bulgaria or Romania or one of the airports. They had the danda would fold up into 9 pieces. That really freaked me out. You know, so, yeah. Okay.
Like a blind person's stick?
Huh?
Like a blind person's stick? And folded?
No, we made it.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's a trip. Real trip. Okay. But yeah, that concept.
Right.
Without the ease.
Yeah.
What is the importance of the number 3?
The number 3. Because you feel number 9 would be better. No one's made a song about number 3, right? 3, body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. So that's the kai, mana, bhakya. That's the 3 dandas. Okay. We send our preachers in ordinary dress to introduce our books and philosophy. Our only concern is to attract people to Krishna consciousness. We may do this in the dress of sannyasis or in the regular dress of gentlemen. our only concern is to spread interest in Krishna consciousness. Right. So the point is this. Sorry. Yeah, but the weakness there is this word gentleman, because gentleman means what, you know, look in you know, gentlemen's magazines. What are they wearing? Yeah, that's gentleman. Whatever you feel like, that's not gentleman. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're still regulated, because now it's, you know, how you say, you know, is it Oxfords or brogues? You know, do you use pleats or not in your pants? You know, do you wear linen? Do you wear this or that? Whatever is the thing that is going on, that's what you wear. Who does that? Right? Yeah, so that's the, huh? Yeah, so that's the point, is that they'll do that. They put a lot of effort in. When they're carrying the main thing they're carrying is clothes. You know those bags, suit bags and that? That's what they got in it. You see, their other stuff is very small. They got a briefcase and a suit bag. So it's very much on what you wear, where, and that, and they have different things that they wear for different occasions. But this thing where one dress fits all occasions, you know, shorts and a polo shirt. So on what planet is that a gentleman? You know, if he's sitting at home, okay. But any other occasion, where would they wear that? You know, and especially not the shorts that they're wearing. You know? You know what I'm saying? So the point is, but we may do this, right? Because our only concern is to spread Krishna consciousness. But this other is no, the main concern is we're Westerners. So how is that this? You can try to take this and use that as the support. But the concern's not about the preaching. The concern is about we're Westerners. Because when you go into environments where it would be of advantage, they don't use it. Because it's about being a Westerner, not about being, it's about fitting in. So it's not about, it's about this element of equality and all that. So it's a political position. Right? Because why? Why can't they do it? Because the people who dress are the regular dress of gentlemen. They're from the political group that says freedom. And none of these wallahs are from that group. It's a whole different mentality. There's about success, it's about the proper etiquette, proper doing everything right. You don't do it like that, then they don't consider you. You understand? So Prabhupada's talking about gentlemen. They're these ones, like this. So it's a whole different mentality. Even on the material platform. If you want to approach it materially, it's a different group. And spiritually, it's about the preaching. So what's going to work? You know? I remember, what is it? Bhakti Tirthamars? He used to wear the African outfits. Like that.
Looks good.
Yeah. Well, it looks way better than these other guys. You know, like that. You know, so the whole point is that it was about you know, because he's black, he could do that. People would notice him. What's going on here? What is this guy up to? And then he would preach Krishna consciousness because he got their attention. When you fit in, you get no one's attention. No one asks you anything. That's why you either dress as a sannyasi or as a gentleman, because either one will attract attention. But when you just fit in, who wants to talk to a guy who fits in? You know what I'm saying? Oh, he fits in, I'll talk to him. No. Right? You know, like if you go somewhere and you want to ask somebody a question, who do you ask? The guy that just fits in or the guy that looks like a gentleman? Right? What? Yeah. So, you ask, that's the point. Yes.
Could you say that our movement has so far failed to attract people that are gentlemen?
No, they're there. They're there.
But not so many.
It depends. Certain devotees are able to preach to that community and get many. Mm. And many don't. So in other words, the ones that talk about it aren't getting any. And the ones that don't talk about it and just do it, then they have so many. Like that. So the point is that if someone's intelligent, then he can appreciate Krishna consciousness. So it's the intelligence that's the important aspect. So it's not what you're doing. But the point is that you're giving pure Krishna consciousness. Because people like something that's there. It has a tradition. Why is Buddhism so popular? It goes back how many thousands of years? Like that. And anybody in the West who has an interest in, they're quite happy to see a Buddhist monk in the Buddhist robes. But we're saying is that, no, people are so narrow-minded and xenophobic, if they see devotees and dhotis and stuff like that, then they'll be turned off and things like that. It's like, then, you're wearing the wrong outfit. Try a white sheets with a white hat with two holes in it so you can see, That group, then, yeah, that might work. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it's so contradictory, the concept, the approach, that it doesn't make sense. Because if it all is equal, then the whole point is you could do anything. So why does it have to be, we're Westerners? Because most of the planet is not Westerners. Yeah, fortunately, yeah. But by volume, they're not. They're the smallest ethnic representation. Though, of course, the ego, is expanded to the whole universe. And so, it doesn't leave any place for other ethnicities. But it's a problem. Okay? Yes. Okay. Verses 10 to 46, the Paramahamsa stage. A person who has attained the Paramahamsa stage is not at all interested in gratifying the material senses, for he is always deriving pleasure from devotional service to the Lord. That means that he's working on the spiritual platform of spiritual senses. Being satisfied with whatever he attains by the grace of the Lord, he is completely independent of material happiness and distress. Right? So that's the point we're trying to get to. So one can't blame the material situation on it. Right? Because otherwise, then how is it... Shivananda Sen's dog went back to Godhead. Right? And she's sitting there complaining to Lord Chaitanya, well, hey, I'm a dog, and like this, and like that. And, we were chased around the block so much, and this and that. And, it's like, no. He just takes part and does service, to the Lord, goes back to Godhead. That's the point what we mean. Despite your background, you can go back to Godhead. But if we want to focus on our background and identify with our background, then, hey, you can stay. Like that. It means that if we leave our body now, wherever we're attached to, basically it's still going to be there when we come back after 9 months. Right? It's not going anywhere. Just you'll be in another generation, so all the things that were valuable to you now, you couldn't care less about. But you'll still be in, it'll work out, don't worry. Right? There's hospitals, maternity wards, it's all happening, right?
Sounds scary. Sounds
scary. Yeah. Okay. Thus he is transcendental to all regular principles, right? So transcendental means he doesn't require them. He's already, all the regular principles are to get you to this stage. He's on that stage, he's not dependent. Doesn't mean he doesn't follow them. He's not dependent upon them. Right? Because someone else, they don't follow him, then you'll say, okay, they're in a fallen position. He follows or not follows, he's still in the same transcendental. And since you're transcendental, what's the reason not to follow them? We take it, hey, well, look, we don't have to follow because it's an attachment. But for them, why wouldn't you follow? That's where the whole thing turns around. It's because someone on the liberated platform, they don't have problem following rules and regulations. In fact, because Krishna gave the rules and regulations, who wouldn't want to follow them? Right? And when Krishna comes here, he has nothing to do. And he follows them. So therefore, then they would have that affinity that like Krishna follows, we follow. So if they're out in the forest, no one's around, you don't have to worry about anything. But if you're preaching and all that, then you act as a mudman, follow the rules that a mudman would follow. Though they don't require those to maintain their spiritual position. That's the point. That's the difference. Understand? So this idea is, he doesn't have to follow so we can give up. I'm advancing so I can give up the rules. No, it's not like that. Like that.
For a certain number of years, maybe centuries, Vaishnavas in this part of India, they were known as Babajis. So, but in the time of Lord Chaitanya, Varnashram was very well established. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and then it seems like the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, who established again Vaishnava and Varnashram Dharma. Why is it this gap in not following?
It's just people get distracted. You have to remember is that you have moguls around who are not overly, when Lord Chaitanya was there, I think it was Akbar. So he was a bit liberal-minded, like that. But then his son was less liberal, and his grandson was an absolute terror. So his grandson, then he had a rule that his men would go out every day, and they had to bring back a certain amount of weight in Brahmin threads. So that means they either became Muslim or they died. You know, so certain things in the Varnashram system kind of become not overly nicely. You're a Hindu, there's a tax. You're a Muslim, there's no tax. So all these things start to break down. You understand? You know, and then after that, then you get the British coming in, and they really, you know, the Indians are the savages, and they're the human beings, you know. So there's something really wrong there. You know, so it has its effect. Does that make sense? So besides that, in the Vaishnava community, the Gaudiya community, it's still going on. But in the general society outside, that's where you see the major changing. Right? Right? Because people would understand the sannyas dress as a preacher, but the Babajis, they just thought were, you know, just guys that didn't do anything. So therefore, then he reapplied the Parivrajakacharya aspect, because then people would respect it and listen to what they have to say. But at the time of Lord Chaitanya, the Goswamis were there. And so, you know, you had all the varieties. You know, Sarup Damodar accepted sannyas, but didn't accept the color, didn't accept the danda. You know, so you had all these different aspects. But he's making a mission, so therefore you establish particular standards. Everybody works in the one way, and then it works very nicely. Like that's why Prabhupada took sannyas from Keshav Maharaj's mat. Is because then they had a standard. And probably went with the Chutananda. They were staying at Sridhar Maharaj's mat, but they would go over to Devananda Gaudiya mat in the day and spend some time there. And when they'd have kirtans, you'd have 20 sannyasis, all the brahmacharis. All the sannyasis were dressed the same, all the brahmacharis. Everybody had the same color, same thing. They would do everything in a coordinated way, like that. And so they would have this very nice kind of like preaching, you know, group. But then they'd go back, you know, to Sridhar Maharaj's place, and they'd discuss, you know, the depth of Krishna consciousness and everything like that. So, you know, so then after going back and forth, you know, many times, and one day when they were riding back in the evening, Achyutananda with Prabhupada in the rickshaw, then he says that Devananda Gaudiya Mat, they have a very organized mission. And then Sridhar Maharaj, then there's, you know, great understanding of Krishna consciousness. And that depth of Krishna consciousness, he says, it appears to me that the proper thing would be to have both. Right? You have people who are deep in Krishna consciousness organized into a mission. Right? And Prabhupada turned to Achyutananda and said, now you understand. Right? So, that's the idea. So this other thing is there, because it attracts attention.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.